All right, I'm recording.
I am recording. Hopefully my phone doesn't go off during this show. It's a beautiful Thursday at the offices of China Hall. It's not snowing
Thursday
outside.
Afternoon.
Josh has been on a hiatus creating content. We haven't seen him for months. I don't even
know. It's been a while.
It has been a long time.
We haven't
time.
Done a podcast in a while.
I had to remind you, we need the styrofoam cups for the podcast.
Yeah, I was forgetting you everything.
Everything.
Playing with the new board. And
yes. Today we are joined by a special guest. I know this special guest, but I'm going to let him. Yeah, can you do drum roll on this? There you go.
Perfect.
It's close
Perfect.
Enough. Perfect.
Special guest, go ahead and introduce yourself and what business do you have in Rochester?
Tasops Omas with Pannekoeken Hollenberry Pannekoeken. Jesus, can we start over?
Nope, it's going. Nope.
I'm so used to saying Pannekoeken, my wife yells at me all the time. It's Hollenberry Pannekoeken.
So, for those that maybe have not heard of Pannekoeken, when it was originally started in Rochester, where does the story begin?
I think the South Broadway store opened in 86, March, and we were there for 24 years, and then we were at downtown for 15 years, overlapping about five, and then they tore down that beautiful building. And we moved two blocks over to the old Deason Center, which we now call Queen City Center. And we're located there as Hollenberry Pannekoeken.
Very cool.
There you go.
Did you ever go to the original?
I hadn't.
Over on South Broadway?
I wasn't really here then.
Weren't you? It's like, I'm sure Tasos can explain it, but it's this classic Dutch feeling restaurant. The atmosphere was very unique there.
It was actually based on a Pannekoeken in Amsterdam, and I went and found it. It looked very similar to ours, the whole decor and everything on the inside. It was pretty cool. And there was, altogether in the early 90s, we had 32 stores, and I think six of them looked exactly like the South one. They were building them exactly the same.
So was it a franchise?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And who started the Pannekoeken in Rochester?
The corporate did. We bought it a year after it was open, a year and a half.
So corporate starts this restaurant, and did they have the intention to sell it, or did they just after, like, running it a year?
They went into a big growth spurt, and I think they opened, like, 16 restaurants, and they wanted to open more. So they decided to sell the Rochester and concentrate on the Minneapolis market.
The new ones, yeah.
And then we also had Fargo and Sioux Falls. They were outside the metro area, outside of the state on those two.
What are you looking up on your phone?
You were talking about old Pannekoekens and stuff, and somebody sent me a picture of one of the original ones was the Robert Street store.
Okay.
Let me find a way to put that on there. It's Ooh, pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool. That's
And it's Pannekoeken Hoos?
Yeah. Originally, they were called, when we took over, it was Seitjes Pannekoeken Hoos. And the original ones were Pannekoeken Hoos.
Okay.
And the story goes there was an independent restaurant. Just send that to yourself.
Well, we can show it on the screen I wanted to pull it up. So now the audience sees it. There it is. All right. And it looks like there's a Volkswagen out front. And any idea who the folks are that are in front?
There's some friends of a friend of mine. They're her grandparents.
And that was the original one on Robert Street in...
Right, that was one of the three original ones. I'm not sure. I think Eden Prairie?
Yeah, that looks pretty old.
Yeah,
that
was, that's 78, we think, 77, somewhere in there. You can tell by the cars around it.
So then corporate decides to sell. Do you buy? Who buys the...
My father and a couple partners, and then I bought my father out about 20 years later, I'd say.
Okay.
And
corporate. Is that where you worked then growing up?
I worked at Max growing up, dad's old place downtown, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we literally, physically grew up in that restaurant.
Yeah.
We just lived there. So we were there all the time. And I was always around the restaurant business and I was always trying to get out of it and saying, oh, God, I never want to be in it. And then here I am.
What are some of the classic stories of the South Broadway Pannekoeken? I feel like people just loved going there, and like, was there the regulars, of course? Was there you know, some of the history of that Panakuk, and what sits in your mind as some of the stories?
It was kind of, you know, it was the first big thing on the south side down there, so it was really busy all the time. And I always remember there was a thing on Facebook this morning. People were talking about the old stock car races at the fairgrounds on Sunday night. And Sunday was such of a busy day, just so many people down there. And I just remember running Panakukins constantly back then. We still saw a lot of Panakukins, but back then we just constantly, and I remember waitresses. It was always, you know, what was going to happen every week, you know. One would slide off the plate and go flying, and waitresses would trip and fall with Panakukins in their hands. And I always remember those stories. And they always seem to happen at the most inappropriate times. So yep. I always giggle about that.
Was Outback there when you originally started, or did that must have come later, I would think.
I think it was, what was it? Ground Round, or was it Howard? It was a Howard Johnson's originally.
Okay.
And I think there was a hotel behind it originally. They tore that down, and the Howard Johnson's restaurant part turned into Ground Round. And then Rookies. I think it was a couple other things in between there, too.
Where the Outback actually was, okay.
Yeah.
And you were talking about the waitresses running around with the Panakukins. For listeners that don't know, why were they running around?
We run the Panakukins out because they come up, they're baked in a frying pan in an oven. The oven's around 400 degrees, takes about 12 minutes end to end. When they come out, they're super puffy and high. So we try to time it out. So as it flips, they flip it onto a plate, they hand it to the waitress right away, and she runs out so it's still puffy when it gets there.
Nice.
Before it goes flat. So that's why we're always running around the dining room.
What are some of the flavors that people can get for Panakukins?
Now you got me here. My favorite's always apple. The Dutch, blueberry, banana, rum raisin, banana rum.
Chocolate chip. Yeah.
There's a cinnamon too, isn't there?
The plain cinnamon. Yeah. Or we used to call it apple, no apple, because there was a customer that came in and always asked for apple, no apple. So for the longest time, we called it apple, no apple, but now it's just cinnamon, yeah. And right now, we're still doing pumpkins, and we're on to cranberry. Mm. Yeah, rum cranberry is really good, this time of year especially.
I was there a few weeks ago, and the family, they all got apple, and I got apple, no apple.
You got the apple.
I just got the cinnamon.
Is that what it says on the menu?
I think it was just cinnamon, yeah.
But it used to be apple, no apple, yeah. There was a fireman and his wife that came in every Saturday morning, apple, no apple.
See, and that's like some of the stories that I think some of the restaurants have, including Panakukin, of just the
I think
regulars.
We've got 6 items on the menu right now that are named after regulars.
Mm. Okay.
That's cool, yeah. That shows the history.
Yeah.
So we have a name change, we added to the name, Hollenberry.
Yep.
So what's the idea?
The long story or the short story? How much time do we have to burn?
Well, what are we at?
We're here all day for you, Dawson. Right. Whatever you want to chat about.
The long story was we just kind of felt like we need to bring it into the future a little bit. And Panakukin isn't trademarkable, so we need to find a name in front of it. So when we knew we were going to make a move, we talked to Tracy Tapp over at Image Bridge. And I kind of told him a story about how when Ferrari was redoing the classic 328, they went to Pininfarina and said, "We want you to design us a Ferrari that we don't even have to put a logo on it. When people see it, they'll know it's a Ferrari." And that's what I asked him to do. I said, "Give me a name that we don't need to tell people. They just know that's Panakukin." And he came up with Hollenberry, and we just loved it. Yeah. But when I test marketed it, people either loved it, and they were like, "Oh, that's the best," or they were like, no, you can't take this away from me. And they tell the stories. You know, my grandma brought me to Panakukin when I was a little kid on Broadway, you know. We had, you know, birthday parties there. We had this. We had, you know, and that was really strong, listening to these people tell these stories. And I was like, okay, we got to put that back into the name. So it became a lot of letters. Signs are really expensive.
by a lot of letters.
And you just didn't want to drop the Panakukin for the reason of the history? Is it?
Yeah. People identify. Plus, you know, what do we have 3 million people coming into town every year, and that's how they remember us as Panakukin, the Panakukin place, the Panakukin. So we just dropped it. We didn't they don't come back every year, so it might be 2-3 years before they come back. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for us, and they found us, which is great. That's the best part. They found us.
Have you? Yeah, you've had like visitors that have been there previously come in.
We had people waiting at the door that last week. They came in every morning, just sitting there, going, "Are you open yet? Are you open yet? I'm sorry. Close. We're really close. We actually opened up a half a day early because this little boy kept coming in.
Really?
He kept waking his parents up at like 5:30 in the morning, dragging them down there to see if it was open. So Saturday morning, we were supposed to open at 1. Mm. And there he was at 6 o'clock with his parents going, not again. And he had his favorite waitress that happened to be there that morning. And I said, let's just open up for him. Yeah. And he came, and we gave them the tour, and they had their first panacoons. That was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You also got muffins on the menu, right? When you walk in on the right-hand side.
Just like before, just like the original store, the first thing you see when you come in are those muffins. I think we have 36 different varieties, and we're always adding new ones. We're always trying different things.
What do you think about, you know, your last location being in the core downtown and now moving just a little bit outside of the core downtown? What in this amount of time have you seen as a difference, or is it the same, or what's happening?
Well, we don't know yet because we got open late and winter started. So let's get a full year under our belt and we'll see. We are 2 blocks further away. The old location was right there, right next to it. But we've seen people walk down, and that's really encouraging. People are finding us and walking down. And now we've got parking, so we can accommodate all the Rochester people that could not get a place downtown. I mean, the downtown place discouraged parking. Those people just made it really hard for people to find a parking spot. And I joking, we're trying bathrooms upstairs at this store. I don't know if it'll work.
What?
If you ever were at the old store's bathrooms, you know what I'm talking about.
No, I wasn't.
You're kidding.
No.
You were in there all the time.
I know, but not... Oh, sorry. Now yeah, I remember. Now I remember. Bathrooms upstairs. Okay, I got it.
So we have a basement. If it doesn't work, we're going to move them back
downstairs. So the old store, the bathrooms were downstairs, and they were not necessarily the most customer-friendly.
Oh, no.
And you had to go downstairs to get there. Yeah, I got you. It took me a moment. I thought you were saying you were putting bathrooms upstairs, and I'm thinking there is no upstairs.
No. In the main level, let's say.
Yes, I see. What has it been like just with the overall team? Like, that's one thing I recognize is there's a lot of familiar faces there from the old store. So was that difficult having that period of time where you were down to keep people interested in getting their job back and, you know, getting them to stay around?
We were down 10 months. I'm very fortunate. I'd say 80% of our employees came back. Mm. They took part-time jobs. We kept them busy. If you look at the inside of the store, a lot of the wood, a lot of the painting and stuff, the staff actually did. It was unbelievable. They stayed with us. They worked really hard to get that store open. It was a real team effort. I don't know any other restaurant that has that kind of loyalty, and I'm very, very blessed to have those people working for me.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
Is your when everybody else is dying trying to find employees and I get to open up with basically the same crew, it didn't take too long for them to get in the groove. You know, I remember when we first opened downtown, it took a month to get everybody retrained or just trained and whatever, getting used to the new space. Yeah. They knew the menu. They knew everything. They just had to figure out where it was, and that didn't take more than 2-3 days.
Is your family involved in the operation similar to how you were when...
It is. My wife had retired from her job, so she's there helping out. We call her the coffee girl. On Sunday, she makes all the coffees. And both my boys work there as waiters.
That's great. Yeah. I definitely like the family.
Wish I had more kids. I could have staffed the whole thing.
Honey, we're having more kids. We need free labor.
It's not free. It's definitely not free.
Not free anymore.
Cheaper.
That's right. Not cheaper.
What about...
You'll learn, Bucky.
What about the things that your father taught you? Is there anything that you just now are passing on to your children? And I guess I would think of an example of like, yeah, you're always going to be mopping and this is the way you mop. Like, is there any particular ways he taught you that you are passing on?
There are some. The thing I remember the most is just keep working. Just hard work and keep working. And I remember him saying, you're learning every day. If you think you've learned it all, you're done. you're finished. Every day going in and you're learning and keep that mentality. Mm-hmm. The other thing I remember when we were at a Panacucan corporate, this customer, one of the franchisees was complaining that people weren't coming at the right times. And I remember he said to the guy, they're not cattle. You can't just drive them in and make them eat. You have to be ready for them when they come.
Was your father originally from Rochester?
No, myself and my father and my mom and I had a little sister. We came in 1966, December. I think we celebrated 53 years.
Cool.
Being in America.
And that was to Rochester?
Right to Rochester.
Right. Yeah.
We came on a boat to New York. My uncle Stan and Aunt Phyllis picked us up, drove us straight here. We went to Max and we ate. We came back a half a day early, or a day early, I think it was, the story. And there's two memories I have. We went to Max and ate, and then my dad stayed there and started washing dishes the day he came to America.
Yeah.
And then we went home, and my cousin Jim and I was three, so Jim and Carrie were in high school, so they were in their teens. And Aunt Phyllis had we'd come home. They drove straight back because they wanted to get back to work. And Jim and Carrie were throwing a party at the house, so there's all these people there.
That's cool. And your father, did he speak much English or
none?
Not at all. Can you imagine?
No.
All right, get to work.
Yep. Well, washing dishes, you don't have to speak much.
I was going to say, fortunately, your relatives speak, would it be Greek?
Yeah, they spoke Greek. Yeah.
So fortunately, they can tell you some direction of what to do, navigate you around.
I didn't speak any either. I remember going off to school my first, they tried to take me to kindergarten, and the kindergarten teacher sent me home because I didn't speak English. So
they just didn't know how to communicate, so.
No, Uncle Stan took us down to, I remember we left there, and Uncle Stan took us to Richard's TV, and he got us a little tiny black and white TV and some rabbit ears. They plopped me down in front of it, and I watched, I think Electric Company was just getting started in all those shows and cartoons, and that's how I learned to speak English. Yeah.
From the cartoons.
Basically. and then they let me out in the neighborhood, too, so I met other kids and started talking.
Yeah. Cartoons are a good thing.
Yeah, there you go. I'm sure the neighborhood kids taught you all the good words, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they were like, all right, here's this word, and here's this word.
Bringing them home, like, who is teaching you how to talk like that? Yeah.
What schools did you go to in Rochester?
I grew up right across the old Wonder Bread Bakery. So Lincoln was my first school through third grade, and then fourth grade to Washington, and then John Adams and John Marshall.
What's Lincoln... Over where it still is?
No, Lincoln was at the United Way.
Oh, okay.
That was Lincoln.
In the Kutsky neighborhood there?
Yep. And that building was the new part. There was an older part in the back, a three-story, really old building. Big banisters. We used to slide down. It was fun.
So I went to Lincoln. I went to Lincoln, second through seventh, I think. And it was Lincoln at Man over, over by the KFC, kind of on the Beltline over there.
So the original one was on 2nd Street right there.
Was it ever called, like, Horse Man or anything? I remember hearing, no, that was Lincoln.
It was just Lincoln, yeah. Mm. Yeah, when they closed it, moved it over to Lincoln at Man.
Okay. Huh. My mom still teaches there.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, my mom teaches there. I didn't have her. My sister did for 1 year. She got a job from Gage and moved over, I think it was Gage, and then moved over to Lincoln. But it's a choice school, so you can go there K through 8. Mm. And... just the one thing I remember particularly is you're interacting with the older grades and the older classmates where you didn't necessarily, from what I was told and what I imagined, get that experience when you're going to the middle school or the elementary school or whatever the case
is. So you're kind of like Laura Ingalls, Little House on the Prairie. You have the same experience.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah. Were you really?
This little class, like everybody's
Bucky in there.
All different ages.
Here's what I remember is playing flipping football out on the playground
getting smoked by
the bigger kids. Yeah, it's like you're up against eighth graders, you're in fifth grade, you got no chance, but it was still fun because you were playing. You were out there.
It was all of them against you.
What's on the docket for Hollenberry Panacucan for the future? Are you putting in any new food menu items?
We just got opened in September, so probably nothing new till the spring.
Okay.
So I can't wait. So last year... I mean, we went through the whole spring, summer, fall without a strawberry Panacucan. So So I think there's a lot of people, including me, that missed out on strawberry panicoons. I think they're the best out of all of them. We got the fish fry that we just started a couple of weeks ago. That'll run through Lent. And then hopefully we'll have good enough weather. The strawberries will come in. And as soon as the strawberries are just right, strawberry panicoons. I can't wait for that to start. But that's a long ways away till winter's over.
Yeah, you're looking out the window and going,
I know.
Oh, jeez. We are not close, are we?
No.
So how have you, what ways have you gotten the word out of the new place?
A lot of word of mouth. Facebook's been pretty good. We just started some billboards and we did some radio ads.
Yeah. Do you do much on the digital platforms? Like more Facebook, Instagram.
I think that's where we need to be. We're working with Bucky on trying some new ideas there.
Yeah.
And everybody, I was with, I had lunch yesterday with Kevin Patton from Flowers by Jerry was in with his dad and stuff, and we were talking about how that's changed. And he's working really hard towards that too.
That's definitely one thing that we're pretty passionate about is the digital stuff. And I think that something like this, and it's obviously a cool spot, and it's really nice inside. Like, it would be an easy way to really start showing off.
Thank you, yeah. Kevin and I were talking about it yesterday, and we're in this generation in between where we grew up. You put an ad in the paper, and people came in. You put a coupon, you got to see it right away. And we've gone from that to, I hate to see it, but the papers, it's, mm-hmm. There's nothing there anymore.
It's much skinnier than it once was. Yeah,
much skinnier. Less local, which means less local contents, which means less local people buying it and using it. And then where you guys are at with the social media, I feel we haven't figured out how to use it properly yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys are playing around with it, doing different things, having success spikes and stuff, but there isn't that. Mm-hmm. Here's the formula yet, is there? It still seems to be in its infancy.
Yeah, there's so many different ways that you can do it. So I think figuring out, you know, what ways, you know, what platforms do we need to be on, what content do we need to be doing. But I think the consistency is the biggest part of it. Because like you will see spikes and like, okay, everybody sees this and then they don't see that, like what's going on. But I think just continually doing a bunch of different things on those platforms really helps.
Yeah, what comes to mind for me is it's difficult in what I know to show direct relation to how it increases sales immediately. Mm-hmm. It's such a long-term branding play where people talk about your brand, see your brand more on this platform that I believe leads to business, but I don't have the specific metrics of saying, okay, because I produce every week on social media about my commercial real estate business, that I have this many more sales. But I can tell you, I feel it, right? I feel people commenting and saying, hey, nice job with what you're doing online, and I like watching, but I can't say that they're then buying a property per se. So it's a brand.
So when did Facebook start?
Must have been 2000s, 2000 and, oh. Yeah, it was 2000s for sure.
When you were describing that, I was just thinking about the fact that in the late 80s when we were doing advertising at Panacucan on Broadway, it was heavy in the newspaper. The newspaper started when? 1400s, yeah, right? And they had perfected it, you know. Yep. And we would put in an ad, or a coupon was a great example. We'd put in a coupon, and they would tell us, you know, you're going to get about a 7-9% return on those. And you knew that's what you would get. And sometimes we got better than that, and you were like, wow. But they had it figured out they knew exactly how many people. But it's been that many years.
So many years of data. And
Yeah. And social and playing around with it, figuring out different ways. Yep. Where 2000, it's 20 years old. Mm-hmm. The newspaper was hundreds of years old before they've got it. They had it to the point where you could put an ad in and they would tell you how many people came in.
Yep.
So you guys are, it's really new.
Yeah.
It's really in its infancy.
And it's, ever changing. It's amazing how fast it's changing. Yeah. And so as soon as you... Yeah. Go and spend the time on something, that feature may be gone or it's adapted differently. Yeah. And I think there's no doubt in my mind, people that have it more down to a science than most. I just don't think that businesses in Rochester specifically or Southeast Minnesota have it down to a science. I think there's still a lot more room for exploring how to show I put X amount of dollars in and I get X amount of dollars out. And
I think you're just looking at the tip of the iceberg. I think there's a whole bunch underneath that we haven't figured out, or people haven't figured out how to tap into, because everybody's using it. They're just not using it, maybe.
I mean, I think that's where I've seen like success is just because everybody's on it, just putting your stuff out there as more of, you know, I'm going to put this in and I want this back, as I'm going to put this in so people know who we are. And just,
again,
more brand, like outreach and brand compared to
sales.
Yeah, sales. And I think, I mean, obviously it's led to sales because people see it, we get the meetings and stuff like that. But yeah, it's hard to directly correlate, you know, I did this and this got me this sale or something like that. But I know it has very, very much helped with just outreach of who we are, kind of thing.
Right. So. Let's take one quick moment and play with our new equipment that we have, the Rodecaster. And let's get a word from our sponsors. And thank you to our sponsor, Snappy Stop, for the greatest soda, the best burgers with everything, bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, onion, and this month you can get peanut butter.
That's great.
So we just recorded that right while you were coming up. You heard us saying that while you were coming up the stairs.
What's Snappy Stop?
Oh, you just...
Is that a gas station?
They provide cups.
Cups at gas stations. Yep.
And good. Peanut butter.
You're battling Quick Trip now.
So this new tool we have, it has all these sound effect features. And
my
like,
second favorite burger in town. There you go. Panikuchen 1, and then Snappy Stop number 2.
I wish I knew where that button was. I would have hit that. I would hit that more often. I love it. So
slowly getting the buttons down where they're all at.
So Tassos was sharing with me about a billboard he wanted to put up. What was on both sides of that billboard?
What?
Flippin' burgers.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's trying to advertise his burgers. And I'm like, hey, man, my father has
a
burger restaurant, too.
He had a like, logo on one side. The guy on the other side of the billboard.
Yeah, so my idea was let's make it a competition.
Yeah. I like that.
Don't eat here. It's like a...
Yeah.
Turn around now. social media. I like where we were going with that conversation. One idea I have is let's come up with three ideas of campaigns that you could run on social media that possibly you could show that sales are increased because of that campaign on a specific food item, on a whatever it might be. What's an idea of a campaign somebody like Hollenberry, Panikuchen, and Tassos and his team could have? Here is my idea. My idea would be, what if you were to do something related to the muffins, and I'm going to call it the Christmas Muffin Challenge, and people have to post their favorite nickname of what a Christmas muffin should be, and... by people commenting and showing if they actually take the step of coming up with a name, when they come into the store and they show you that they commented, you would then give them a discount on a muffin. I often don't see small businesses turning it into something where they have to show on their phone something to help relate that customer to a specific sale. That's my idea.
I was thinking that too, and we were talking earlier, why we don't do a coupon on the phone where they can just show it and absolutely. Get a muffin or a discount or whatever. It's the same as bringing in a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Like it would expire at some point.
You see it, you can tap into it and collect it, or it sends to your email, and you know, then you have the information and they have the code.
When you walk in, you show it, code's on it, and boom. Yep. You go.
Yeah. And even if they don't show a coupon, they show that they actually interacted with a post. Could that count? Right, and that's like your ticket into getting the discount. That's one of the campaign ideas I have.
Just anything that's interactive, something that not just you're just putting out there and hopefully they see and come in, but if you're actually trying to track it and get results from it, I think then it has to be something that they do interact with, because then you can physically see and show. Okay, we did this, and this is how many results we got.
Yeah.
Because we're making them do something.
Right.
So that would be, figuring out what that is. But I was thinking, some kind of code or anything that they could show. What I like is, I still think email lists and stuff like that are important. So if you can create any kind of deal where they click into it and all they have to do is insert their email and it sends them the code or whatever it is to get the discount, you have their information to use for any kind of marketing down the road.
Are you a big discount person?
I don't mind them, no. I
know some business owners are like,
I just cringe at getting people's information than bombarding them. I hate that when it happens to me.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
I'd rather just put a coupon out there and whoever wants grabs it and uses it.
I just think information is so powerful these days. I mean, even if email lists themselves are important, just not even if you were just going to create a campaign and use the emails, but you can use those emails on social media. So I can go into Facebook and say, I want to create an ad, a lookalike ad, with this email list. And it tracks all the data from those and can go and target people that are similar to the email list that you just inserted. So there's just so many different ways that you can use people's information for marketing. So I just think it's a powerful tool. And I would agree that a lot of times people use email wrong because they do just bombard you and it's information that you don't want to see.
I stopped using email. Yep. I think I've got 1,000 on there now. I'm just done because it's just full of junk.
Yep.
It's a lot to manage.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Another random idea. What about doing a Christmas sweater challenge? People are out front of the store and they have to show their ugly sweater. And just by participating, they get an opportunity of getting a...
Like taking a picture and tagging.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great one for Snappy Stop. A bunch of ugly sweaters. I don't know that I want to be associated with the ugly sweaters, Bucky, but I think that'll work for you.
There you go. But again, participation is where it's at. How do you get that participation so you can show as a business owner we're actually getting people to do the thing?
Well, I think it's fun for people because...
But how does that relate to sales? Just got a bunch of people with ugly sweaters out front.
Well, are they not going to come in for their opportunity to get a deal on the chocolate chip pannekuchen?
I don't know.
That's what you'll have to find out, right?
But then their friends see that.
And then their friends...
Their whole network that they just posted to see that there's a pannekuchen there. What was I going to say? The interaction thing. I think that's even more... People like it more because I think digital has taken that personable stuff away, and it's like how do you create that interactiveness to?
You know, I feel like the grumpy old man here with you two young millennials, but you know, you guys talk about these. Oh, let's do this and ugly sweaters out in front. I'm thinking of more, you know, a coupon in hand and walking in and handing it. I mean. The pannekuchen or the coupon is secondary. It's just about the ugly sweater, right?
Yeah.
It's the second thing on their mind. Rather, we really want it to be the first thing. Is how do we make a sale?
I think they would be thinking chirping, about it.
Chirping noises out here.
What's the last coupon that you've actually used? Physical, printed off coupon.
I was never a coupon. I'm unfair to that because I was never a coupon guy. I was just not a coupon guy, so I didn't really use coupons. But
is it coupon or coupon?
Coupon. I'm not sure. Sorry.
I don't know either. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. So,
but I was just never.
So what
you have to ask somebody who used coupons.
The ones that I use is the reward from Office Max or Best Buy, where you can get it from your phone, right? But I get the email that says you have $12 on your Office Max rewards, and then I'll print it as my reminder, and that's really my coupon that I'll use. The other one I'll use, and it's not actual physical, but the rewards for Quick Trip, I just don't forget because it's right here in my phone. I can pull up the rewards, and I swipe it, and then I can go into the app and try to find a deal that way. So I just think of physical and... The younger generation, I don't think, is using the physical coupon anymore.
It can be on your phone and stuff too.
100%. Yeah.
Well, I think sometimes when you put on a contest like that, it's secondary to the coupon. They're really there for the take a picture out in front of the store with an ugly sweater.
And that's where you go. Maybe it doesn't directly correlate to instant sales, but I think just more of the brand and exposure of what you would get doing something like that. Because the big thing with what we do, if we can collaborate somehow and work with other people, we can then utilize their network. So they have a bunch of followers that don't follow me. But if I do something with them and I post about it and they're tagged in it, then all their followers now that didn't follow me now see my stuff. So it's like you're just
building that brand awareness.
And more people see it because they're
in. But how does it correlate to sales? Guys keep building this brand awareness and everybody knows me. Bucky and I are trying to sell burgers.
Right.
While we have a bunch of people parked out front taking pictures, the customer drives by and goes, "Ooh, it's busy there. I'm not going in there."
Yeah. I'm empty. I think if more people know about it, more people are going to buy it, though, instead of the person that doesn't even know you're there.
Yeah, that's you're taking a bet on that.
Better chance. Yeah.
Yep, you got a better chance for sure. Fun conversations. We like marketing a little too much, don't we?
Do we have another ad we could do for you, Bucky?
No, we'd have to make it. We'd have to make it right now. We could make the Hollenberry Pannekoeken ad right now, record it, and then it would be out there for everybody to listen to. Let's go around and just share what businesses locally do you appreciate the way that they're marketing? One business that you see, and it doesn't have to be right now, but you just see how they're doing it over time, and you've been impressed in the way that they're marketing and what they're doing.
I can't think of one right now.
Interesting. All right, so I'll give you one that just sticks in my mind. This was a while back, but one of the tree companies had put a billboard out comparing themselves to another tree company. And what they had shown was there was the tree company of the guy that was the big burly beard and, you know, the tree man. And then there was their company that was the very professional look. And I just thought it was... I thought it was unique. You don't often see people that are comparing themselves to competitors out there. And so I thought that was unique for sure. And I think billboards in that way can be used to help gain attraction. Another one, and it caught attention, was the Virgil's billboard over the Pulvers store on Highway 52. Yeah. And then the media picks it up. And, you know, there's something to be said about is any... Any, what is it, news, bad news? Like, it's everybody's...
Spell my name right.
Yeah.
All news is good news.
Yeah. Yep. So those are the two that just, off the top of my head, come to mind.
I'm just trying to think about who does it over the top. I mean, one that just came to mind was the Collins orthodontist.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know...
He's killing it.
A dentist office that just took digital and just ran with it, you know, social media and stuff like that. And that's correlated to massive followings and so many more people using him. And, I just appreciate that. And he's going around and speaking about it and
really
doing a lot of stuff just from being like the first dentist that does that kind of thing. Then it almost takes off just because you're the first and you're doing it well and you're doing it consistent.
It helps to be the first.
Yep.
It really does.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, just as a measurement reference, he has 1.2 million followers on his TikTok, which is correlated to, I can go into his Instagram, but I think about 60,000. And he's finding a way to share about his business in a fun, unique way that's attracted to millennials and younger, that then in turn helps build his brand awareness, that then in turn people are getting orthodontic services from him. And so... There's his account, and there's his last video has 306,000 views. His video before that has 563,000. Now, they're not all from Rochester, of course, but I would think that if I'm a young boy or girl and I recognize that my orthodontist or somebody that I know goes to an orthodontist that has a followership of that amount, I'm going to tell mom and dad I got to go to that one. That was a good one.
And he makes it fun kind of thing. And that's, he does. That's what the kids and stuff really enjoy.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, anytime you make a dentist fun, that's great.
What you got, Tassos? What have you seen? What marketing, what company has done a unique job marketing?
Jeez, you know, when you first said it, one thing popped in my mind. Half the people listening probably won't remember the Where's the Beef Wendy's did way back in the day. And that was hugely successful. The new Coke, old Coke, I always like that one. Everybody wonders if it was an ad campaign or they really screwed up that bad. Pushed them over the top. Pepsi was making a run and they pushed them over the top. I always like that one.
And didn't they retract that Coke then? They said, we're not actually putting out the new Coke. Because
they put it out for a short time and they said, ooh, we made a big mistake. Our old Coke was actually better. We tried to make it more like Pepsi and nobody really likes Pepsi. So. I just saw a thing on that, and they talked about how they were slipping to Pepsi until that campaign went, or whatever it was, went out, and then they really exploded again.
That's cool. I like that. All right, Tassos, we are nearing our time. We like to go for about 45 minutes on the Office of China Hall podcast.
Really? We've been here for 45?
Yeah. Just about. Jeez. Isn't that fun?
Goes quick.
Yeah, it does.
So for people that... don't know where Hollenberry Pannekoeken is, where can they find you? And
214 North Broadway. We're right on the corner of Broadway and Civic Center Drive.
And you have something going on tonight. What?
Fish fries tonight.
Every Friday.
It's really good. Really good. I had it last Friday, too.
What comes with the fish fry?
Your choice of vegetables, soup, salad, and, of course, our always my favorite skin-on handmade mashed potatoes. Yes. So we take potatoes, clean them, boil them. We add sour cream, butter, chives, salt, and pepper. Not bad. And we hand match them. Nice.
I might be seeing you at Hollenberry Pannekoeken later, Josh.
That's right. Fish Friday night.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thanks, you guys.
We really appreciate it. Can we try with the new board the outro music? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. Ready?
Turn it up.
We got a graduate board. Off to the Channel Hall podcast.
That was fun.